Coming up next, it's Farm and Country with Kimberly Izar.
From the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Farm and Country. I'm your host, Kimberly Izar. Happy Saturday morning. It is June 20th, and happy belated Juneteenth. Today, we are taking you across the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania in the first half of our show. We're visiting farmers markets this season. From Wurzburgo to Delhi in New York, all the way to Holly, Pennsylvania by the Lackawaxen River, Radio Catskills' Olivia Sipple and Rosie Starr has more on what you can expect from your local farmers markets this summer. In the second half of the show, Arnold Kelson takes us to Bloomingburg to Hidden Acre Farm. It's a certified organic farm spanning over 4 acres. Plus, how to avoid heat illnesses and other summer health risks as many prepare to spend more time outdoors. But first, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. Vice President J.D. Vance says top U.S. negotiators Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner are in Switzerland as the Trump administration works to restart talks with Iran. Speaking on Fox News, Vance said senior officials from several countries are expected to arrive in Lucerne as early as Sunday.
So we'll plan the talks when the principals from the Iranian government, also the Qatari and the Pakistani government, arrive. That may happen as soon as tomorrow, but these things are always a little bit in flux. Jared and Steve have been on the ground now for a few hours, dealing with some of the technical elements of this negotiation.
Iran says it's once again closed the Strait of Hormuz to shipping traffic, but Vance has denied that claim. The vice president says he may travel to Switzerland in the coming days. He was supposed to have led a delegation to Lucerne on Friday, but that got postponed because of intense fighting in southern Lebanon. Israeli airstrikes in Lebanon overnight have killed at least 16 people. That's according to government and local officials. NPR's Jawad Rizkala reports the attacks continued despite a U.S.-brokered ceasefire agreed by Israel and Iran-backed Hezbollah on Friday.
The Lebanese army announcing the soldier's death said Israel's attacks were aimed at obstructing efforts to restore stability in Lebanon. The Lebanese army has been tasked by the U.S. with replacing Hezbollah, the militant group Israel is fighting. Hezbollah politician, member of parliament Hassan Fethullah, said the group reserves the right to confront Israeli forces advancing further into Lebanon.
Sunday's
fighters were responding to an Israeli attempt to seize al-Tahir, a strategic hilltop. Israel has made clear it will not withdraw its forces from border areas and has been pushing beyond those further into Lebanon. Jawad Rizkala, NPR News, Beirut.
Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni is pushing back after President Trump said she begged him for a photo op at last week's G7 summit in France. Megan Williams reports from Rome.
Giorgia Meloni posted a video calling Trump's account completely fabricated, saying she was stunned the U.S. president would make up a story about a partner country.
Io e l'Italia non imploriamo mai.
Italy and I do not beg, she said. Italian leaders from across the political spectrum quickly backed her. Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani even canceled a planned trip to the U.S. Meloni had tried to position herself as Trump's closest European ally, but strains over Iran, Ukraine, tariffs, and Gaza have been growing. And here in Italy, the spat is being read as the end of a close political friendship. For NPR News, I'm Megan Williams in Rome.
This is NPR News in Washington.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Kimberly Izar. On Friday, Americans across the country celebrated Juneteenth to mark the end of slavery on June 19, 1865. That included local celebrations, including in Liberty in Sullivan County. Residents and community leaders opened the day with a sing-along to Lift Every Voice and Sing, a hymn and poem by NAACP leader James Weldon Johnson from the 1900s. Alicia Santiago, vice president of the NAACP Sullivan County branch, says Friday was an important reminder of Black history.
There was a time when my ancestors were not free, even though we celebrate 4th of July.
And it's very important to me to keep the heritage and the roots alive, to remember. If you forget the history, you'll repeat itself. So we want to make sure people have a good time, laugh, enjoy. But if you don't remember the history of what happened to us, it will happen again.
On June 19, 1865, federal troops marched to Galveston, Texas, to inform enslaved people they were free, over 2 years after President Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. But Santiago says the day was also an afternoon for celebration, filled with good food and community.
We're going to have chicken, hamburgers, hot dogs, rasta pasta. We have a bouncy house over here. We have a dunk tank.
Juneteenth became an official U.S. federal holiday in 2021. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort, offering small ship experiences with a shore excursion included in every port and programs designed for cultural enrichment. Learn more at Viking.com.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange, Sullivan, and Rockland, a publicly supported philanthropic institution. Information at CFOSRNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Farm and Country. I'm Kimberly Izar. So if you have been tuning in and listening closely here on Radio Catskill the past few weeks, you might have heard a few new voices. Olivia Sipple and Rebecca Hendricks have joined the Radio Catskill team this summer as our summer reporting interns. And joining me in the studio now is Olivia, who's pursuing their master's degree at Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at CUNY, focusing on local accountability reporting. Olivia, welcome to Farm and Country.
Thank you so much for having me.
And, you know, we've obviously talked about this, but Craig Newmark is my alma mater. So excited to have you and Rebecca here for the summer. I'm always really excited meeting folks in school who are pursuing their master's in journalism. And I know that you're focusing on local news, so definitely in the right space. What drew you to this field?
You know, my story is really funny because initially I didn't even really second guess going into my undergrad to do journalism. But then afterwards, I was like, what made me want to do this? And I really had to think about it because when I was going into college, I initially wanted to go to law school. And I was like, what can I do before law school that would be fun and interesting? I did not want to just be an English major. I was like, it's going to be really boring and it's for 4 years and I have to pay for that. And I found out New Paltz had a really good journalism program, and I was like, I might as well do it. And then, yeah, I found my love for local news at New Paltz, and it kind of just blossomed from there. I mean, my uncle was a journalist, so I guess that's really where my inspiration comes from. And just, like, always having the news on when I was a kid.
Yeah.
It was always around me, so I guess that's really why I ended up jumping into the field.
That's awesome. And, yeah, as you mentioned, you graduated from SUNY New Paltz, so you're definitely not a stranger to the area. And, you know, I loved hearing about what drew you to journalism. Like, why specifically radio and, like, audio? Because I love this field because it's, well, we could go on and on, but would love to hear just a little bit about what drew you to this medium.
So I'm actually going to give a shout out to Brett Berry right now. Brett Berry really made me find my love for audio work on my undergrad.
Saturdays at 11 a.m. here on Radio Catskill.
Tune into Cats Cast. And before that, I was like, audio work is very difficult. I can't do it. I wouldn't be good at it. But then I ended up taking Brett's podcasting class. And then I started interning for him at Cats Cast in my undergrad. And I was like, wait, this is so much fun. This is great. He allowed me to do one of my own projects that he very kindly assisted on. And I went on a camping trip and I was like, this is something I could do and I could do long term and full time. And yeah, then after that, it kind of just honestly just kept on moving. And then I ended up here. And I've done podcasts in the past. Like I do one for my master's. I did one for my undergrad. So I wasn't unfamiliar with editing audio and like being in the audio space, but in the end of the day, no one could take away your voice. Mm. And I love the radio and I love every single element of what the radio could bring. So that's why I'm here now.
I think that's one of the funnest parts about working in audio is just being able to find your own voice and then also helping other people find their voice and sharing that with the community. So you joined the team just a few weeks ago at the start of the month in June. What kind of stories have you been working on and what are you looking forward to this summer?
So I've been working on a lot of fun stories. My first story was the Pine Bush UFO Fair, which I went to last year as well. And it was just a fun time. It's always great being in Pine Bush again. And I also did a bunch of two-way interviews. I have a story coming up that's going to play after this. And yeah, I've just been having a lot of fun exploring everyone, everything around me and talking to everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, like my favorite types of stories are like, I love an event coverage. I love a piece about local culture. I love a piece that just explores like a new business, explores a new farm, does anything with agriculture. Because I'm originally from the city. So I'm not very much surrounded by farms every day. So coming up here and being able to explore different types of agriculture and different ways of agriculture and growing and even growing season, all of that. Yeah, it's really interesting. And it's one of the reasons why I wanted to come back up here.
Well, I know that you have been visiting a couple farmers markets. Do you want to tell me a little bit about the piece we're going to hear about?
So from Delhi to Wurtsboro, these farmers markets offered a wide variety of different products for shoppers to shop local during the farmers market season. And I was lucky enough to speak to farmers and local vendors about what makes these farmers markets so special. This included a mushroom farmer, poultry farmer, and even a cheesecake maker. Here's my adventure throughout the counties and me exploring local farmers markets and finding out the benefits of shopping local.
Well, let's give that story a listen. Here is Radio Catskills' Olivia Sipple at the Wurtsboro and Delhi Farmers Markets.
The roads are clear. The sun is out. Trees are in bloom again. And the air is finally warming up. As the season shifts into summer, farmers market season is back. Across Delaware and Sullivan County, weekly markets are bringing together local farmers, musicians, and community members, along with visitors passing through, all with one goal, to shop local and connect with the people growing their food. That took me to Delhi last Wednesday, to Courthouse Square, where I spoke with vendors about what these markets offer and how people could better support them.
Well, there's just so many good things here. You know, it's way better than the grocery store.
First, I met Seth Friedman, a mushroom farmer who grows his produce just 10 minutes from the market. He says proximity makes a difference.
Okay, well, you get high quality food. You get to get closer and get to know the people who make the food. That's a special thing. You get to meet other people who like to eat healthy, fresh foods. You meet them at the market.
Friedman brings a wide range of mushrooms each week. Many you will not find in a typical supermarket.
Yeah, I'm a mushroom farmer. I grow a bunch of varieties of mushrooms. I grow them just like 10 minutes away from the market. They're all super fresh, picked within the last few days. Every market, they're fresh picked. There are varieties that you can't get everywhere, like maitake, hen of the woods. You won't find that anywhere. So it's a special thing you can pick up at the Delhi market. And other mushrooms that people are into, like lion's mane, oysters, shiitake. Yeah, that's what my farm was all about.
There were nearly 70 vendors at the market, with live music playing throughout the day. But markets like these are not just about what is being sold. They have become gathering spaces, places where families sit on the grass, kids run around, and neighbors catch up. Katie Toker, a regenerative farmer in Delaware County, says that sense of community is just as important as the food.
We are out here in beautiful weather. There's a place to hang out and picnic, walk around, bring your pets, bring your family. Kids can run around. There's live music. Also, the traffic of the farmers market brings a lot of business to other local shops and restaurants.
That support, she says, should not just stop when the market season ends.
I mean, the more you support small-scale agriculture in your local community, the healthier it is for everyone.
For shoppers, there's also something else. Transparency. At a farmer's market, you are not just buying produce. You are meeting the person who grew it. Isaac Kinzel and Maggie Allen drove from Roxbury for a simple reason.
Apples. And that's pretty much it.
We just wanted to come. That's it.
But they say knowing where their food comes from keeps them coming back.
I think it's just good for everyone. Like, it's good for the farmers, and then it's good for the community to be supporting the farmers. And you're eating better food. More healthier.
You know where it's coming from, and you know the people growing it. Makes it better. Cleaner.
The next day, I headed south to Wurtsboro, where the market doubles as a community event. At Veterans Park, the Wurtsboro Board of Trade hosts a weekly music and farmers market, where people bring chairs and gather around the gazebo and settle in for the evening. By 6 p.m., the lawn begins to fill. Chairs lined up, music playing, the vendors surrounding the park. L.J. Phillip of North Country Farm says markets like this bring people back to a more direct way of shopping.
I mean, you can see there's like all different kinds of stuff. I mean, we have vegetables, there's another vegetable person, just diversity, you know, bread. It's like a one-stop shop, kind of like how the old ways it used to be. Don't go to the grocery stores, go to your markets, you know, email them, you know, give you stuff if they want, you know. I mean, yeah, stay away from the market, the supermarkets.
Philip says his farm particularly focuses on natural growing practices.
We're a 5-acre family-owned, all-natural farm. We don't use any chemicals or any spraying.
He adds that markets also give farmers a chance to educate customers, something you do not get in a grocery aisle.
I mean, because, you know, you drive by, you see it. It's like, oh, what's going on here? And then they come in, there's such different things, and everyone's so, you know, nice and have something to sell and a story to tell. So it's really nice.
And it is not just produce. At the Wurtsboro Market, vendors like Robert Woods, known as Cheesecake Bob, brings homemade goods and a personal connection. He says supporting local vendors starts with something simple, showing up.
Yeah, just come. Come. You have a stand for the coffee trailer. It's not the same on your phone. We need a connection. That's what we're missing in our lives, you know? People know it. They may not understand it, but they will.
For Woods, that connection is part of what makes the food meaningful.
But intention, though, you know, is like my intention in making this food is for everyone to enjoy it. You know, that's it. Don't attach nothing to it.
From Delhi to Wurtsboro, these markets are doing more than selling food. They are creating spaces where communities gather, where farmers share their work, and encourage others to shop local during the season. In Wurtsboro and Delhi, I'm Olivia Sipple for Radio Catskill.
Thanks so much to Olivia for that fun report. The Delhi Farmers Market is open Wednesdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Courthouse Square in Delhi. And the Wurtsboro Farmers Market is on Thursdays from 5 to 8 p.m. at Veterans Park. We're going to stay on the topic of farmers market as we head further west of the region along the Lackawaxen River in Wayne County, Pennsylvania. Farming Country's Rosie Starr visited the Holly Farmers Market in Bingham Park and spoke with beekeepers and some of the farm vendors. Here's Rosie.
For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr. I'm in Holly at the market on Friday. It's a summer market now. It's a beautiful day right now. Very idyllic over here. And I stopped as a customer to give a try at something. I'm at Blue Hollow Farm Stand. They're in Waymart. But I'm going to ask this young lady to introduce herself and tell her what her part is on the farm and what she's selling here.
Hi, I'm Jenny. And my part on the farm is we're a small family farm, me and my kids. We do pasture-raised ducks, and we also have lamb, and we do meat ducks as well. And
I'm the customer, and I showed up, and I'm like, oh, you have eggs. And she says, they're duck eggs. And I I gave that look like, I never did it, I'm scared. And she convinced me to, you know, give it a try and see what happens. And better than that, a customer approaches and says, oh yeah, you'll be back for more. So let's find out what customers have to say about duck eggs. What is your name?
My name's Tim, and I got into eating duck eggs quite a few years ago, and then I found out I actually had an aversion. I had a food test done, and I was actually had an aversion to duck eggs. And then I tried these ones up here from Blue Hollow Farm, and I don't have anywhere near the reaction, so it must be something that they feed their ducks or what, but the eggs are absolutely fantastic.
Well, tell me what you do with them.
I just cook them just like I would a regular chicken egg. A lot of times I have like fried eggs or you scrambled eggs or you can use them for any recipes, but
they're substantially larger.
They're a bit larger, yeah. They're more like the size of a jumbo chicken egg. But the yolks are nice and rich and they're just absolutely delicious.
Okay, I'm going to take your advice. Do you have any opinions on duck eggs?
No, I would just concur. It's funny because when we had that period of time when we weren't able to eat them, there would be moments where we would be missing them, where we would often reflect and say, oh, it would be so nice if we could have duck eggs again. So I feel like this was actually just a blessing to stumble upon this farm and to give him a chance to try them again. And the fact that we've been doing well with them has just been incredible.
Okay, I'm going to go back to the farm owner. Because I want to know, what is it that you're feeding the ducks?
We feed all of our ducks with local feed from also in Waymart. We do soy-free, but they graze, and we move them every single day, so they're eating bugs and plants and whatever else suits their fancy.
In other words, free range.
Yes. Pasture raised, yep.
Thank you. Thank you. You love flowers? What does that mean? We're at a farm stand. The name of your place is Heart Meadow? What is it?
Hickory Heart Meadow Farm.
Okay, introduce yourself. I'm doing a little radio story here.
Oh, no way. I'm Rachel. I'm working with the nonprofit, the Hickory Heart Meadow Farm. We're run by Outdoor Nurture, Inc. So it's just founded. It's an educational mission to reach out. We're a 501c3, so we're a conservation nonprofit. The main goal is just to bring more garden education to the public, especially at Port Jervis Farmers Market. We do a lot of educational opportunities there. You'll find us at the Milford Farmers Market as well. And we do also post a lot of educational classes on the farm, so we'll post on our social medias. You can find that Hickory Heart Meadow on Instagram and Outdoor Nurture, Inc. on Facebook. So we'll share whenever we're doing any bouquet arranging classes, seed saving classes. We have a wildflower cut patch of native wildflowers, so people can come down. We'll show you how to identify them. You can come and cut yourself whenever we're doing those certain events. And we do also have volunteer days, so just look out for, I believe, Wednesdays and Fridays. We have volunteer blocks where just reach out on our email or on socials. Let us know you'll be coming down and pruning, weeding, cutting flowers. We'll have all different kinds of volunteer opportunities.
Well, what days of the week do you hold the classes? And give me a sample of a class, what it's like. What ages attend these classes?
It's kind of all ages. We do also have workshops geared more towards children because that is very important to Eva Schwartz, who is the heart of the operation. She's actually used to be in the Montessori system, so she's really just so excited whenever she gets seeds in kids' hands and how to separate seeds from the chaff and how to plant and even doing like scavenger hunts, that kind of thing. The volunteer slots, I know they're Wednesdays and Fridays, but all that information would be on Outdoor Nurture, Inc. on Facebook or Hickory Heart Meadow at Instagram.
What is your background that you've got involved in this?
So I grew up, I'm born and raised actually right across the river from where the farm is. So I actually went to them last year looking for dahlias because they're kind of hard to come by. And so somebody referred me down to them and they actually let me come right down to the farm. The main farmer, Jesse, she let me come and pick flowers. She obviously gave me a quick rundown to make sure I knew what I was doing, but yeah, she let me come down, pick all my flowers. I did it right on the farm to buy flowers from her. And while I was there, it was me and actually my husband came to help me as well. So while I was there, she wanted to have an educational opportunity. So she showed us how to harvest peanuts while we're there. Just a quick little 20-minute lesson. And
then after, I wanted to stay involved because they're just so close to where I am, and I really love the conservation mission they have about supporting native, saving native seeds, and educating the public is really, like, so important to offer free education for something that's so, especially around here, where I feel like a lot of people, if you're not from the area, you might not know what's growing in your backyard and what is the best thing for your pollinator garden or... So, yeah, I just kind of got involved. I was looking for more volunteer opportunities, and then they were looking for some help on the farm.
Well, that was a symbiotic relationship that started. Tell me, we're in the center of Hawley, the town. Where is the Meadow Farm located in relation to the Hawley town?
So we are down Hunter's Ridge. The living community would be the closest landmark. So if you're going from Route 6 heading down towards Rollins, Pennsylvania, very small little town. If you're from around here, I guess you would know Rollins. So down through Greeley, just above between Greeley and Rollins, it'll be about a mile up from the river. But we have a sign out front. It's pretty easy to find a spot on the side of the road there.
Well, you have a very alluring booth here. I see small lavender bundles. Do you grow all of these?
Everything that is flower product or herbal product is all grown on the farm. And for our bath and body products, that anything that we do not grow or make ourselves, we source that from our local farmer friends. Lucans, we get some beeswax from them. So try and do everything as local and as nature-friendly as we can.
And your sign says organically grown, so that's nice, using biodynamic methods. That's a good concept.
Yes. Yeah, so we are very focused on working with nature instead of trying to fight it. So our garden is actually, at the end of the day, pretty low maintenance. A lot of prep, obviously, in the spring, but we use grow mats to suppress weeds, and we don't use any chemicals. A lot of the weeds kind of, you know, we pick and choose. Obviously, if they're very noxious, we'll get them out of there in the spring, but a lot of times, some violets here won't kill the flowers at the end of the day. So yeah, we just try and work with what nature's given us. A lot of volunteer plants, too. Like, we have a whole bed that popped up from last year, and we just kind of might as well let it grow since it already volunteered itself there.
It sounds like a pollinator-friendly atmosphere. Do you attract lots of bees and butterflies?
Yes. Yeah, so we do have, actually, if you see our little fairy vases on the end, that's all native honeysuckle. We do have an invasive honeysuckle you'll find around, growing around in the woods, the Japanese version. But we do have about 3 species, if not more, of native honeysuckle. So I have the coral and the yellow honeysuckle on the table here, which actually that brings in the hummingbirds as well, butterflies and hummingbirds.
I appreciate your work. It's such a beautiful stand, and I love it that there's literally sculptures here with these dried flowers and all kinds of fairy. Part of the fairy land, isn't it?
Yes.
I left the Hawley Market Friday afternoon with delicious duck eggs, fabulous arugula, and a new flavor, tangy Vietnamese carrots. The Hawley's Farmers Market serves the community during the summer, Fridays 2 to 5 at Bingham Park, and in the winter seasons inside the Hawley Hub. For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr.
Thanks to Rosie for that report. And hey, if you are actually over in Wayne County today, don't forget to check out the Wayne County Farmers Market happening on Saturdays today. It's happening actually right now up until 12:30 p.m. It kicks off, I believe, around 9:30. We're really, really blessed with so many good markets in this area, especially during the summertime. We're going to take a short break, but coming up, the latest Star Talk. Stay with us.
Radio Catskill, keeping New York voters connected this election season. Early voting is happening now in New York State and goes through June 21st. All registered voters in Ulster County are eligible to cast an early vote at one of 3 locations in Ellenville, Woodstock, and Kingston. Find your New York early voting polling place at elections.ny.gov. That's elections.ny.gov. Primary election day is June 23rd. This is Radio Catskill.
Donna Fellenberg here on Catskill Character. This week, my guest is Anne Hart, owner and operator of Domesticities and the Cutting Garden in Youngsville, New York. This unique store has been in operation since 2004 and is comprised of the shop, the Cut Your Own Flowers Cutting Garden, and the barn, a DIYer's paradise. Tune in Saturday at 11:30 for Catskill Character with guest Anne Hart on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Farm and Country. I'm Kimberly Izar. So here on Radio Catskill, especially on our weekday shows, The Local Edition and Radio Chatskill, we've been reporting on all things New York State legislative session the past few months. The New York State legislative session actually wrapped up just a few weeks ago. And on the environment front, environmental groups had their eyes on a number of bills to protect public health and the planet in the state legislative session that just ended. From the New York Public News Network, WAER environmental reporter Chris Bolt reports on several disappointments where advocacy fell short.
Perhaps the developments that drew the loudest outcry were changes to the state's climate law. A key shift stopped the monitoring of fossil fuels used here, but sourced elsewhere.
Under our 2019 law, where we're responsible for those emissions that we let off here, but also those fossil fuels that came into our state. When we were looking at, okay, what are the impacts? The point of this law, we would be responsible for all of those impacts with natural gas and delivered oil.
Environmental advocates of New York's Catherine Nadeau adds, another change in greenhouse gas monitoring hides the impacts of methane on our climate. And she notes targets for renewable energy growth and fossil fuel reductions became just goals instead of mandates. Also left on the table, or in our trash cans, was a failure to pass the Packaging Reduction and Recycling Act. Environmental advocates Claire Walsh Winsler says the bill, known as PREA, fell short.
The bill that would both reduce the overall amount of trash, but also reduce the toxic chemicals in our packaging. Unfortunately, we did not see PREA move in the Assembly. It did pass in the Senate. We will be back again to fight this big, massive load on our environment.
The measure would also have required producers of packaging to help pay to recycle or dispose of it. Environmentalists further lamented inaction on bills that would have outlawed PFAS chemicals linked to cancer and illness. Drinking Water Protection Director Rob Hayes says bills to prohibit them from cosmetic products and a range of household items failed to come to a vote.
PFAS are so ubiquitous that you have to be addressing both the contamination that's already happened and taking action to prevent further contamination, because these chemicals are still being put in products.
These measures are not dead, say advocates, who plan to fight for their passage next legislative session. In Syracuse, I'm Chris Bolt for the New York Public News Network.
And thank you again to the New York Public News Network for their reporting. Up next, you know what time it is? This week's Star Talk Report from Keith Hubbard.
For Farm and Country, I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. Tomorrow will be the summer solstice, the day when the sun reaches its most northern point for the year. Even though the summer solstice actually refers to the moment when the sun reaches its peak in the sky for the year, we refer to the day in which this occurs as the summer solstice. Derived from two Latin words, sol meaning sun and sistere meaning to stand still, the term solstice describes what the sun appears to do. If one were to observe the maximum height of the sun each day during the weeks leading up to the summer solstice, one would notice that the sun climbs higher and higher in the sky until it comes to a stop on the summer solstice. The summer solstice is the longest day of the year, and tomorrow we will see 15 hours and 14 minutes of sunlight. Those living north of the Arctic Circle will see 24 hours of sunlight tomorrow, and anyone south of the Antarctic Circle will not see the sun at all. For those living on the Tropic of Cancer, 23.5 degrees north of the equator, the sun will be directly overhead at noon. Cultures from around the world have celebrated the solstice for millennia. The solstice marked the start of the new year in the ancient Egyptian calendar. It was a time of social equality in ancient Greece, and the Sioux tribe held rituals honoring the sun on the solstice. Head outside tomorrow and enjoy the longest day of the year. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future Star Talk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and Star Talk, this has been Keith Hubbard reminding you to keep looking up.
Thanks to Keith for that report. So whether you are attending more outdoor gatherings this summer, or maybe you're spending more time in nature or on the farm, maybe even watching the FIFA World Cup, I'm going to decide not to disclose who I'm rooting for, but best of luck to everyone who's playing. Staying healthy, getting back on topic now, staying healthy in the summer heat should always be top of mind. Radio Catskill's Tim Bruno spoke with Dr. Noah Schmuckler, a family medicine provider with Crystal Run Healthcare, with tips on how to stay safe and healthy in the sun.
And you know, it was a bit of a hot weekend, many people outdoors.
Uh-huh.
What are some of the biggest health and safety concerns you see every summer?
Now, every single summer, and I'm glad you had me on to talk about this because I represent urgent care as well, and we see a lot of people coming in after they had a great weekend. They had a lot of fun, but they were in the sun, they were in the heat, and they didn't drink enough water, they didn't put their sunblock on, and they can have all kinds of scary-looking symptoms. People feel really sick, and they can't quite understand why. It really all comes down to protecting your skin and drinking plenty of water.
Are there particular risks this summer that people should be paying extra attention to?
Yeah, with the festivities we've got around the World Cup, we're going to have big gatherings. There's going to be a lot of heat, crowds walking around. We might have some alcohol in the mix. Makes things fun, but the alcohol actually can make you more prone to dehydration. Once you get some dehydration on board, you get some extra heat. You can experience something called heat exhaustion, and this can show up in a lot of funny sort of ways, but it's pretty recoverable with lots of fluids. Unfortunately, if you keep going and push past that point, you can get into heat stroke, which is about as scary as it sounds. You're talking about some real damage that has occurred just from having too much heat, just from having not enough water.
And I want to ask you some, you know, FIFA World Cup specific questions later, but you mentioned heat and hydration, and we should just remind people, what are the warning signs of heat exhaustion, and how does that differ from like a heat stroke? What should people look for?
So with heat-related illness, you can start to feel unusually fatigued. You can start to feel unusually sweaty and hot. When the heat is really bad, there's nowhere for the heat to go. Your body actually builds up all that excess heat, and it can't evaporate off of you. So if you find that you're not sweating as much as expected, there's a chance that you're starting to run out of fluid in order to get some of that heat out of your system.
And how can you tell the difference between simply feeling hot and experiencing a medical emergency?
Well, it's the same with most medical emergencies. Something's just not right. You're going to have your heart racing. You could be feeling unusually tired. You could have a headache. You could be starting to have some trouble just getting through sentences, walking around. So if you're feeling a little more tired than expected, you want to get yourself into some shade. You want to get yourself some fluids. You want to get some rest, and if you've been hitting the alcohol, make sure that you're alternating away from that with plenty of fluids.
And fluids like sports drinks or electrolyte beverages, are those helpful, and should you consider using those as you if you are drinking, alternating between that, or just for fluid intake?
You know, those electrolyte drinks, the funny thing about electrolytes is they're present in anything that you might eat. So you actually don't have to worry about that as much as we may hear in the on the sales pitches. You know, those are additives, but we drink water. Water is what does it. Water is the thing that you need.
Pure and simple. Beyond heat, what should folks know about sun exposure and preventing sunburn?
Yeah, it's a great point. That's the thing about you put your hand on the stove, you know right away you got to burn. But when you're in the sun, it's this slow process, and you may not even notice it until it's quite a bit too late. So if you've got SPF 30 on you, you're in pretty good shape. Remember, you have to reapply that every couple of hours, especially if you're sweating or you're out moving a lot. But just assume that if you're in direct sun, your skin is getting cooked. So you do want to make sure that you've got SPF protective sunwear, seek shade when you can, and you can't put on too much sunblock, because once you have that burn, into urgent care, they come into primary care, they have the burn, they want the magic secret sauce that's going to make that go away. But it's a burn. It takes time. There's really nothing that makes it go away more quickly. Frankly, the only thing that's going to heal you faster is rest and fluids. That's what you need to heal a burn.
Of course, summer is one of the busiest travel seasons, even busier as millions of fans attending World Cup matches this summer in the Northeast, New York, Boston, Philly. What would you tell folks who are spending hours outdoors in those outdoor stadiums before and after a match? What should they do?
Well, I would be coming prepared on your packing list. I'm sure you've got your sunglasses and you've got your sports team supportive stuff, but make sure you've got a water bottle, something that you can refill. If you have a supply of water, that's even better, that you can return to. When you're in those settings, make sure you know where you can get to some water and you can get to some shade, because you just want to be sipping on that water all the time. If you're drinking at all, make sure you're alternating with water. And don't forget your sunblock. Make sure you reapply that frequently.
And these are large international events and people from all over the world come. Can folks do anything to reduce the risk of getting sick while traveling and attending these big crowded events?
Yeah, the nice thing is that when you are outdoors, there's enough airflow most of the time that you're less likely to catch anything that is communicable. But the closer you are to people, the more that you're in an indoor setting, the more at risk you're going to be. There's nothing wrong with throwing a mask on. If you know you're going to be in a setting that's crowded, that doesn't have good airflow, close proximity, shouting, that's a time when you could pick something up. The other thing to remember is there are certain infectious diseases that can live on surfaces. So anytime you touch a surface that other people are touching, whether it's door handles or turnstiles or seats, maybe keep a little bit of hand sanitizer on you as well. And that can help reduce your limits, reduce your risk of exposure as well.
And let's just remind folks some basic emergency preparedness, whether you're attending a World Cup event or local summer festival or, you know, backyard barbecue. What are symptoms that should never be ignored?
Never ignore chest pain. Never ignore shortness of breath. If you notice some nausea, if you notice that you're needing to use the bathroom more frequently, getting any lightheadedness, rapid heart rate, headaches that are coming out of nowhere, really anything that seems outside of the norm, it's better to be safe than sorry. So make sure you've got your cell phone charged, you have an emergency contact, you have a plan for how you're going to make your way out and over to a place that's safer.
And what about if someone who may be attending an event or be around someone who's experiencing a sign of heat illness? What immediate steps should they take?
I would definitely be getting them into a cool area, getting some cool compresses on them, but don't hesitate to hit that 911. You really don't have to own this soup to nuts. Calling 911 doesn't guarantee someone's going to be taking a trip to the ER. It does guarantee that there's going to be someone coming by with some medical training to evaluate them and help make that decision with you.
And what's one summer safety tip that you think people should hear every year, but still they don't take it seriously enough?
I mean, I would circle back to the sunblock. I see so many cases where people are out there trying to get a tan, and they come back and they've done some real damage to their skin. And these things relate to each other because your skin is what holds the water in. But as soon as you get a burn, as soon as that skin dries out, you're going to get dehydrated that much faster. Add alcohol into the mix. That increases blood flow to the surface of your skin, which means more water is evaporating out of you. The alcohol actually speeds up the dehydration. So don't turn into a crispy raisin. Make sure you've got some block on your skin and plenty of fluid going in.
That's good advice. Dr. Noah Schmuckler, a family medicine provider with Crystal Run Healthcare. There's more information at crystalrunhealthcare.com. Doctor, thanks so much.
Thanks so much. Thank you.
We're going to take a short break. But when we come back, a special visit to Hidden Acre Farm in Bloomingburg is up next.
Hey there, I'm Jason Dole, inviting you to ring in the summer and support Radio Catskill at the second annual Lou Beach Community House Summer Jamboree. Join us from 5 to 8 this evening for live music from Lolly and the Pops and Patsy Cline tribute group The Recliners, plus cold beer from Catskill Brewery. Tickets $25 at the door, benefiting Radio Catskill. Info at WJFFradio.org. The Lou Beach Community House Summer Jamboree, a project of the Beaverkill Valley Land Trust.
On last week's Wait Wait, Shane Torres was disappointed with the current state of American cuisine.
You know it was getting bad when we all allowed Flamin' Hot to be a flavor? Because like neither one of those words is a flavor.
That's right.
I'm Peter Sagal. Tune in this week for the news quiz that looks spicier than it is. This week with the author of the book of the summer, Yesteryear. That's Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me, Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back. You're listening to Farm and Country. Well, as is tradition here on the show, we're taking a deeper look at a local farm who's producing and providing to our local communities in season or year round. Radio Catskill's Ronald Kelson stopped by one of these farms, Hidden Acre Farm in Bloomingburg, New York, to get a snapshot of what they're all about.
On a humid, sticky spring day, Jack Wedham realizes this kind of weather isn't really optimal for growing or harvesting.
Okay, so today is a harvest day. Today is also 100 degrees with crazy amounts of humidity. So we're trying to get as much done as we can before the heat of the day hits, although it's already here. I think I'm a quarter body weight lost in sweat already. So I'm just getting the sinks filled up. We've got spinach and other leafy greens that are going to come back down and get instantly cooled this morning. When you're dealing with leafy greens or any vegetable, if you want to keep it a long time and you want it to last a long time in the fridge, the stage it was harvested at is crucial. So we try to get it out of the fields while it's cool and immediately chilled in cold water before it goes clean into our fridges. And that means that when we're taking the spinach home, instead of it lasting a couple days, it's lasting a couple weeks.
Jack, along with his wife Melissa and three children, run Hidden Acre Farm, which is nestled right off of Burlingham Road in Bloomingburg, New York, the southernmost village in Sullivan County. Jack and his wife Melissa became farmers a little later in life than most.
Farming has been a second career for me. So I, as you can tell by the accent, England, not Australia, for those who are thinking Australia. We moved out here from England in 2012. It was a sales and marketing job that brought me here. And kind of figured out after the birth of our first kid that myself and my wife, Melissa, wanted to take a little bit of a different direction in life and do something more meaningful. So we thought farming might be a good idea and pivoted and went to work on farms for a few years. We worked at an amazing farm in California, Kern Family Farm. And Aaron and Hansel and the family there just really inspired us in a certain way of life and a certain way of farming and gave us kind of the skills and confidence to start our own operation.
And once Jack and Melissa acquired some of those skills, the next step was finding a farm of their own that worked for them.
It had always been tricky being in the US and particularly living out west or Texas where we started. It's a long distance from our original family back in Europe. So we were looking for farmland and we were looking for farmland on the East Coast. And there's a young architecture family that owns a property here and they had built this two-family house. We're looking for a farmer to be able to regenerate their land in this cool kind of symbiotic relationship. And that's what we did. We came here in 2019 and started the farm. The property here had been derelict for a few years. So right now, looking around and seeing this amazing utopia with the Shuangunks in the background and, to be fair, suburbia in the other direction, I can be pretty proud to see what we have now compared to, I guess, the literal dump site from when we started.
In this self-described utopia, I saw about five main greenhouses and Jack says they've each got their own little growing thing going on inside.
So has every greenhouse kind of got its own stuff going on inside of each of it?
For the most part, we're year-round here. Anyone that lives in the Northeast, which I'm assuming is everybody listening, they'll know how brutal the winters get. We only really have 4 months guaranteed frost-free, July, August, September. That's three. We often get a late frost in June and an early frost in September. So you need frost, you need protection for the plants. That's why these tunnels are really important. They ensure that something like a tomato, which is in, we have tomatoes in three of these tunnels, actually four of these tunnels, they don't like to be rained on. They'll take any excuse to die. So having cover over here, having the fans going, having shade over the greenhouses means that we can get a consistent crop throughout the summer and have safety in the protection that the tunnels provide, which you don't get in the field. So they're super important for trying to grow vegetables in the Northeast.
I also asked Jack how Hidden Acre Farm fared during this particularly frosty winter that happened this past off season.
This year was a really cold winter. We have these, we have five big greenhouses, so they're unheated inside the tunnels. We have a whole host of hardy greens that we try to put in the ground in August, September, so that it can grow as big as possible by solstice. So like after mid-December until March, there's so little light that nothing's really growing. Everything just goes through a cycle of getting super cold and then thawing throughout the day in the tunnels. So all of our tunnels are unheated. We grow throughout the winter kale, spinach, lettuce, arugula. And we have hoops over all of those and many frost blankets. So they're all covered with up to three layers of frost blankets. And then with all of that, even with the temperatures being super brutal outside, all of that food will last. They will allow us to provide to the locals and to our city markets year-round, all throughout the winter months. And this year we lost barely anything. That's in these protected tunnels. So what we have as almost a guarantee trying to farm in the Northeast is crazy weather. So, I mean, they say we're lucky to live here. This is one of the more temperate places in the country. But every year we'll get, you know, it tends to be that we're bouncing from one climatic crisis to the next. This year's been a super tough time in the Northeast. A lot of our friends with orchards lost all or the majority of their apple harvests. Got farmer friends down even in Virginia that have no stone fruit this year.
Hidden Acre Farm produces a lot of stuff, and each season, regardless of whether it's hot or cold, frosty or humid, doesn't come without some crop loss as well.
We grow a whole array of organic vegetables, but we also grow lots of flowers, and we rely significantly on flower sales in the early spring, particularly around Mother's Day. We grow a huge amount of tulips. Tulips, peonies, and a lot of the native flowers and perennials took a real big hit in that 90 degrees back in April, and then it had a real crazy frost. At Hidden Acre Farm, we grow a huge amount of diversity. So if one crop fails, we have another crop straight after it. It's not like we are just reliant on apples for our income. And even within that, so like we grow lots of lettuce for lettuce mix. There's like 20 different varieties of lettuce we'll grow. So even within that single crop, we still have diversity. And that is really hedging our bets against the weather, because it's a guarantee that there's going to be loss. At least I've been farming here in the Northeast for 8 years, and we haven't had a season without any incidents so far. So,
Jack also took me around the open fields, and I got to try some pretty delicious crops picked right out of the ground, like some kale, which, believe it or not, I'd never even tried before.
You know what? On the way, we'll have a little bit of kale.
Oh.
So you may have been used to massaging your kale.
Yeah, I'm not really used to any kale.
Take a bite.
Yeah. That's good.
So it's super tender.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is what kale should be. It is a hardy green.
I also got to try some Chinese green-stemmed cauliflower. And I'd never really been a fan of cauliflower before, until this time.
So here, we're walking past some Chinese green stem cauliflower, which is one of the more specialty and novelty things we grow. So I'm going to try and give you a nice bite of this. So this is like a cross between cauliflower and broccolini. So you're seeing, oh, you know what? Just take a bite of that and tell me what you think.
Okay. Mm. Oh, wow. No, I don't think I've ever had this kind of cauliflower.
No, we grow a lot of what people don't normally find. Mentioned before, we're not worried about crops that don't store well or travel well. We want to get the best tasting, best looking food in people's mouths. Try and get them to think about more about how food is grown. So lots of kind of novelty, specialty, and weird things you might not normally see available is what we like to grow. So we have quite a wide array of sources that we'll get seeds from and try different things out. And this cauliflower is something that's proven to be super popular. It's one of the few things my own children eat, able to send them in their packed lunches. But yeah, you don't normally think about having a raw piece of cauliflower. To get excited about, but this stuff is super sweet.
I can relate to that, yes. But no, this is super sweet, lots of flavor.
And for the most important part, here's how you can get some of Hidden Acres products.
We have a CSA for our locals. We're located in Bloomingburg, New York, which is not far from Pinebush and Wurtsboro. So you can come and have a look at our website at hiddenacre.farm and check out that side of things. We do also do wholesale orders if locals want to reach out for a lot of our crops. And then we are physically present in Bronxville Market every Saturday. And Carroll Gardens Farmers Market every Sunday. And we show up in a pretty big way to both of those markets. So that's the easiest way of seeing us from a retail standpoint off farm. But we also provide a local CSA to our kind of hyper-local customers around here for pickup Friday and over the weekends.
In Bloomingburg, I'm Ronald Kelson, Radio Catskill.
Thanks so much to Ronald for that report. And I actually tried some of Hidden Acres Salsa Verde, and that was very, very good. A few happenings in our community the next few days. Happening today, Radio Catskill will host a summer jamboree concert at the Lou Beach Community House. We're going to have musical guests Lolly and the Pops and the Recliners. Ticket proceeds will benefit public radio right here on Radio Catskill. That'll be tonight from 5 to 8 p.m. And we hope to see some of you there. Also happening this weekend is the Deep Water Literary Festival that happens in Narrowsburg. It kicked off yesterday, happening today, also goes until tomorrow. Combining author conversations, readings, and educational outreach with multidisciplinary arts programming, Deep Water goes beyond the standard model of a writer's festival and invites the audience to engage in the world of books beyond the page. That happens all of this weekend in Narrowsburg. And then on Wednesday, June 24th, the Wayne County Commissioners and the Pennsylvania Natural Heritage Program will have a public meeting on the Wayne County Natural Heritage Inventory Update. It'll be at 7 p.m. this Wednesday at the Library of the Park Street Complex in Honesdale. The Pennsylvania Natural Heritage Program collects information on unique plants, animals, and natural ecological communities. You can learn how to help on this effort during this meeting. And of course, as always, you can find more events on our website at wjffradio.org. That's all for this week's show. This show was produced by the Radio Catskill editorial team and post-production by Ronald Kelson. Stick around. Up next, it's Cats Cast with Brett Berry. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. We'll catch you next week.
Support comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, fighting for clean air, land, and water since 2008, both locally and beyond. Information online at their Main Street storefront in Narrowsburg or their office in the Narrowsburg Union. DamascusCitizens.org.
Sign up for Radio Catskill's free weekly newsletter. Get the latest local news, culture, and things to do in your inbox every Friday. Stay connected and informed with Radio Catskill's newsletter. Subscribe at WJFFradio.org.
If you've got an amazing record collection, but you also need to downsize, why not give it to Radio Catskill? We're always taking donations of clean vinyl in good condition for our music sale. Donate today at WJFFradio.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.